Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. My guest today is a licensed clinical social worker and mental health therapist. She's also known as the swearing therapist. Consider that your warning. The language gets a little salty on occasion today. Zilma got her qualifications in her 40s and 50s. Why did it take so long? Well, she had to move about 10,000 kilometers. And then mid-education, she needed to take some time to deal with her breast cancer and then the death of her mother. She describes her mode of therapy, and it makes a lot of sense. While she's licensed to work only in Nevada, if her methods make sense to you, she can recommend therapists wherever you are. Zilma also believes in the power of laughter, and there's a lot of that in today's episode. I want to tell you about a new feature before we get started. At the website, boomwithabang.com, I've created a resource section. You can look up previous episodes by subject. You can find books written by guests, some interesting courses and offerings, lists of job and philanthropic possibilities. Also, if you're at all curious about the life of a house/pet sitter, I'm journaling my journey there as well. The tab is called Life with No Fixed Address. Listen now to my conversation with Zilma Williams. Oh, and Zilma, happy birthday. I get quite a few requests from people wanting to be on podcast. Just as you listeners are a varied bunch, I'm open to a variety of guests. I browse their profiles, and if I can relate the topic to our demographic, they're welcome. Today, my guest was a shoe-in within seconds of my opening their profile. I mean, really, who wouldn't want to chat with the swearing therapist? I told you you'd laugh. Of course, there's way more to Zilma than swearing. Thank hope. Originally from Argentina, she moved to the U.S. as an adult, where she continued her education. One degree under her belt, she was diagnosed with cancer. She moved back to Argentina, where she received treatment and had family love and support. Healthy, she returned to the U.S., where she completed an advanced Master of Social Work program. And now she's a clinical social worker. That's obviously the Cole's Notes version of Zilma's life, and we're about to hear more. Zilma Williams, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to this. Before we start, can you tell us about Argentina? I mean, I understand it's big, it's rugged, it's beautiful.
Yes, all of the above. So Argentina is a beautiful country. We have mountains, we have lakes, we have ocean, we have desert, you name it, we have it. There is a part of Argentina in the south that is called the Switzerland of South America because the lakes and the mountains are so beautiful and crystal. And I never been to Switzerland, but that's what that place is called. It's called Bariloche. And unfortunately, with all that beauty, it comes a lot of instability. So like socially and the economic situation over there is horrible. There is a lot of corruption. I moved in 1996 because of those situations, and unfortunately they're still the same today. Not much has changed. I visited recently. I was there in March of 2025, and it's still the same shit than when I left. If anything, it's worse. So it is very unfortunate. Another thing is, I'm from Buenos Aires, which is the capital of Argentina, and the weather, we have all four seasons over there, but we have a lot of humidity. So in summer, you take a shower and you come out of the shower and you're drenched again. And in winter, no matter how many fucking clothes you put on, you're freezing. So, but we don't have a snow. And I think it's because of the high humidity. We have a snow in the west where the mountains are, and in the south of the country, but not so much in Buenos Aires, but a couple of times it has snowed in Buenos Aires, and it was such an occasion because it never happens. People there are so wonderful, but unfortunately there's a lot of depression and anxiety because of this socioeconomic situation. So you are considered old at around 30 years old when you are looking for a job. And that's when it starts declining. So as like, you are in your mid-30s or 40s or 50s, forget about it. Like it is so hard to find a job. So that's one of the main reasons why I left and I came to America. And now that's one of the fucking reasons that I'm thinking about leaving America, because like the situation here right now is like, maybe we are becoming Argentina. The United States is becoming Argentina, and it's not a pretty picture. But it's a beautiful country. Best time of the year to visit is between March and April, or September, October, when the seasons are turning. And we have the opposite season because Argentina is in the south. So when it's winter here, is summer there. So for Christmas, I did my shopping in July, right? To send over there. And it's so interesting. Fun fact, when I moved here, I moved to America in December. And so I came from summer to winter, right? And Mother's Day, so the first Mother's Day here, we celebrate in May. And over there, Mother's Day is in October. It's the third Sunday of October.
Okay.
So, okay, I'm here, right? Like I said, Mother's Day came and went. And then here comes September. And I'm like, oh shit, where I'm gonna find a Mother's Day card in Spanish in September? You know what I mean? Because it takes so long. At that time, we didn't have email, we didn't have, like, so it was like the regular mail. So my first year here, my mom didn't get a Mother's Day card for Mother's Day. But then the following year in May, I bought a Mother's Day card in Spanish in May, and I kept it until September so I can send it to her for Mother's Day over there. So little tricks that you learn along the way.
You could have bought her a Thanksgiving Day card and just said, "I'm so thankful you're my mother."
That's true, but that's past October, so like it will have work anyway. But yeah, beautiful, beautiful country. If anybody listening is can go there and visit, they're not going to be disappointed. It doesn't matter which part of the country you pick, it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, I must admit, I was surprised. I'm a motorcycle buff, and I had watched Ewan
Nice.
McGregor and Charlie Borman in their Long Way Up, I think it was, video, where they went from the southern tip of South America up through the Americas to Los Angeles on motorcycle. And the cold was, they were on electric bikes, and the cold was really caused a difficult start for them. So I'm going like, holy crow, that's South America. That's supposed to be tropical.
Right, no, not at all. And this, so Argentina has the southest point, which is Ushuaia, and it's like, yeah, it's over there, it doesn't snow. Like, I mean, it's close to Antarctica, so it's like, you're crossing the just, and it's Antarctica there, so like, yeah, it's freezing. I had a high school friend. She moved from Buenos Aires to Ushuaia, and I'm like, the fuck is wrong with you? Like, but she loves it there, but you have to put up with the weather. I'm not sure that I like the snow that much. Like
I hear you. I'm in Canada, you know what I mean?
right. So you know it. Like, I'm like, I went to Canada. I did the training in August of 2016. And in Alberta. And I was like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. It was 10 p.m. and there was still daylight. And And she said, "Yeah, we're going to start having the snow in a couple of months." Like, what? Like, I'm out of here. Like, you know. But it was beautiful, beautiful weather, beautiful people. You people are so nice. Like, I wish we could be
I know.
fucking 10% of the nice like you are. Like, you know. So, yeah.
Oh dear. Okay, and in the way that these recordings are always live, my glasses that I need right now are over on the kitchen counter. I'm just gonna grab them. I couldn't figure out why you and my notes were a little blurry, and then I realized I had the wrong glasses on. Oh,
Oh my
look at,
God,
I
I
can see
love
my
it.
notes now.
How about that?
Okay, so you moved to the US, you got your BSW. 6 weeks later, you received your cancer diagnosis. That must have been quite the gut punch.
Yes, so I was working in accounting, in an accounting department in a big corporation here in America, and I was kind of like thinking about the future, and I was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to be doing this for another 25 years. So I started my bachelor's at 42, and I graduated at 46. I did it in the 4 years, and then I was on track to start my master's. So I graduated in December, and I was going to start my master's in August of the following year. And then on February 14th, Happy Valentine's Day to me, I got the news that I had breast cancer, and I was like, okay, holy shit, like, okay, like, you know, life has other plans for me. I had surgery and radiation here in the States, and then I moved back to Argentina to be close to my family. And when I look at the bigger picture, there was another reason for me to be there. A year and a half after I moved back, my mom unexpectedly passed away of a heart attack. So I think that the bigger picture was that she got to see me that I was doing okay, and she transitioned in peace because I mean, I don't have children, but I presume when you have children, like you know, I told you on the phone, like, oh yeah, I'm doing okay, and then I hang up, and you don't know if I'm doing okay. But she saw me that I was doing okay. And then I was like, you know, it was a huge cultural shock when I moved here. And then it was a huge cultural shock when I moved back because I was here for almost 17 years. So it was like, I was like, oh shit. Like, you know, like I was like, oh, I remember why the fuck I left to begin with, right? So I was there for about 3 years, and you know, a year and a half into being there, my mom passed away, and then I was like, you know, I think that I'm gonna go back to the States, and I asked God for a sign, and I was planning on coming back to the States. This is in 2012 that I got diagnosed, and I got diagnosed in February. I moved there in June. And I was planning on moving back to the States to celebrate my 50th birthday, which was in 2015. I'm gonna turn 60 this year, because you are in 2025. So I was like, okay, I'm planning on moving there. I want to sign that this is the right move. So out of nowhere, I got an email to my personal email. So I don't know how it is in Canada, but here, when you are at the university, you get an email from the university when you are an active student. But after a couple of years that you are not a student, they deactivate your email. So this was sent from University of Nevada, Las Vegas, to my fucking personal email, saying like, oh, we have the advanced program, the advanced Master of Social Work program. Do you want to register? This is 3 years after I graduated. Like, you know, it was like, okay, God, like, yeah, I wanted to sign. You fucking send me a fucking banner, you know, like. So I apply, I got admitted, I moved back to the States in May. My birthday is in June, so I hit the ground running. I did my master's in 1 year, which is very intense. I celebrated my 50th birthday here. And I started doing my, so I graduated at 51. I went to Canada to get my training in accelerated resolution therapy because at that time, ART was not as popular on the West Coast of the United States. It was more popular on the East Coast. And going to Canada was a fucking 3 hour straight flight versus crossing the entire United States to Miami. So it's like, Canada, here I come, right? Like, so I got my training. And then I started my internship. So the internship for social workers, at least in Nevada, is 3,000 hours, 2,000 hours of direct contact and 1,000 hours of other. And I completed my internship and I became independently licensed at 53 and a half. So if anything, cancer came to show me how bad I wanted to be a therapist. Because it only delayed me, but it didn't stop me. Right? And one thing that I want to make clear to everybody listening is like when I was working in the accounting department and going to school, I was doing both things. It's not like I stopped the accounting to do social work. I started building my future while I was still doing what I was doing. So sometimes we have this idea that, oh, I had to stop everything and start something new. And it's not like that. You can start building. So while I was still working in accounting, I started building my future in a different path. But I was doing both things at the same time, basically. Right? Like, so. I think that, so, and going back to what I said earlier about Argentina, my high school friends were like, what the fuck, what the fuck are you doing going to school at 42? You're not going to get a job because over there at 30, you don't get a job, right? You're already too old to get a job. So one of the things they didn't understand is that in this profession, my age in life experience is an asset because the shit that we were reading on the textbook, and then my classmates are 25, right? They're like half my age. So I was a mom in the entire classroom, right? In the entire program. I remember one time I had two students in front of me. One was 23 and one was 27. I'm like, it takes a fucking two of you to make my age, like, so. But the shit that we were reading in the textbook, I had experience in my life, right? Like, so I was like, there are a lot of Hispanics in the West Coast in the United States. And not only I speak Spanish, but I know the culture. It's not that I just speak the language. It's like, no, I know that as a woman, you don't get a voice because I'm from that culture. It doesn't matter, I'm from Argentina, you're Mexican or Colombian, it's the same shit. It's the same machismo, it's the same culture, it's the same, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you don't have a voice, you stay home, you raise the kids, like, right? Like, so it's like I bring that to my office, I bring that to my interaction with you because, like, when I was an intern, so I graduated at 51. I became an intern at, let's say, 52, 51 and a half, 52. And I will have people with children and I will, give recommendations or whatever, suggestions. And there was another intern, she was, I don't know, 25 and she looked 13, bless her heart. So they were like, and she was doing the same shit that I was doing, but she was being questioned. Like, do you have children? Nobody fucking asked me if I had a child. We had told you, like, no, I don't. You know what I mean? Like, but they assume because I'm fucking old that I had children. So my suggestion was taken differently by the clients because we are the similar age, so they're assuming that, and I was an intern and I didn't lie about those things. I was transparent. But because I was an intern at a later stage in life, they're like, oh, she might have a lot of experience. Yes, I do have a lot of life experience, but I'm learning just as the 25-year-old intern was learning. I consider that such an asset into my practice because it's like I know trauma. I don't have to read it on the book, right? And I'm very transparent about my cancer diagnosis because I think that it helps me bond and connect with your trauma. You don't have to have cancer. Trauma manifests in so many different ways, but it's like you don't have to explain trauma to me, right? Like, and I always say, if I fucking did it, you can do it too. I'm not special, right? Like, it's like, oh, what is special? But nothing. I fucking like went to my fucking treatment. And then I decided that this was not gonna stop me. It only delayed me, right? Like, so when I have a person telling me, oh, I'm too old to go back to school, bitch, like, you're barking at the wrong tree. I was 42 when I started. I was 50 when I did my master's, and English is not my first language. What's your fucking excuse? Because really, like, no, don't fucking tell me. You know what I mean? Like, tell me anything else, but don't tell me you cannot do this because I did it. I'm not telling you that, oh no, I believe in you. It's like, no, I'm telling you, I fucking did it, so you can do it too. Tell me you're not as passionate, you whatever. I'll take that. But not that you are too old
Yeah.
to start over or to, do something different.
Yeah, and ageism is one of my bandwagon soapboxes. So yeah, maybe I'm gonna go to Argentina and raise a little hell, raise a little hell. Okay, so you specialize in anxiety, depression, and trauma. Now, my question was
Correct.
going to be, did you focus on that because of your own life events? Those are your life events. Was social work always on your radar, though, or was it just that something that you decided you were interested
So
in midlife?
I always was interested in being a therapist, but so in Argentina, to be a therapist, you can only do psychology in a school, in higher education. Now they have, well, not now, a few years back, they started some like counseling. You can study counseling, but it's not at the university level. So when I told my therapist that I wanted to be a therapist, she suggested social work because social work has more, like, if I get tired of being a therapist, if I was a counselor, a professional counselor, that's what you can do. But if you get tired of doing counseling in social work, you can do a lot of other things. That's why I went the social work route. But I always had this thing where about helping people, where people will tell me their fucking life stories, and I'm like, I think I'm gonna start fucking charging for this, like, so I'm doing it for free, and I think I have this gift that I hear what is not being said. So you are talking, and I'm like, and I might say something like, oh, I hear blah blah blah, which you didn't say with words, but I picked on that. And the client will be like, oh yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I'm like, okay, right? Like, so I have that, and that's why I'm the swearing therapist, because I fucking keep it real. Like, I don't have time. Life is too short to be sugarcoating shit. Like, I will tell you as I see it. Not necessarily as it is, but I will tell you as I see it. I think that my job as a therapist is to provide you with a different perspective. When you are in the picture, you cannot see the picture.
Correct.
So the different perspective that I provide you with is based on what the fuck you told me. Like, I don't know. I'll take what you told me at face value. I believe you. right? So I'll take that information and I give it back to you with this different perspective. And it's like, oh, I never thought of that this way. Yeah, that's why you pay the big bucks, right? To get that different perspective. But the way that I'm talking to you is the way that I talk to my clients. Like, there's no fluff, right? Like, it's like, listen, are you ready to get better? We're going to hit the ground running, because like we don't have time. We don't have time. Nobody has tomorrow guaranteed. So if you don't do it today, when the fuck are you going to do it? One of the reasons why I moved, so I had this fantasy, if you would, in my head, that I wanted to move to the United States. And I was 31. Like, I have my entire life in front of me. But one of the things that marked me at that time, I had a cousin who was, I don't know, 32, we were very close in age, and he died of a stroke. He had a stroke and he died. So I was like, bitch, you don't have your entire life in front of you. Nobody has tomorrow guaranteed. And I went to my therapist and I said, I'm moving to America in December. And he was like, good for you. Because it was like a realization that if I don't do it now, when the fuck I'm gonna do it? Right? So, and I try to live my life like that. So we plan as we are gonna live forever, but we live as we are gonna die tomorrow, because nobody has tomorrow guaranteed. So I want to leave a legacy, and at the same time, I'm fucking doing the best that I can today, because I don't know if I'm gonna be here tomorrow.
And I think for our audience, mid-age women are notorious for saying, oh, well, I'll do it, when the kids leave the house. I'll do it when my husband gets that promotion. I'll do it when I get the promotion. Whatever. There's always a reason, and I'm using air quotes, to put it off, to delay. We are notorious for putting ourselves on the back burner. So what you're saying is so important.
Especially women, right? Like, oh, well, the children, or well, like, you know what? It's like you cannot give from an empty vessel. So you need to take care of you. You are the fucking glue who keeps the family together. So if you are not there, who's gonna fucking do it? So as a service to your family, you need to put yourself first, which is so hard, especially for women, to understand. Oh, it's selfish. No, it's absolutely necessary. One of the selfless things that you can do is to put yourself first, because once you fill your cup, then you can be there for others. But what happens is that I put everybody else ahead of me. I'm at the bottom, so by the time that I need to fill my cup, I'm exhausted. And I don't have any more fucking energy. And I want our audience to hear this very clearly. You don't have the time. I get that. Because, bitch, like, you don't fucking understand. No, I understand you don't have the time. But because you don't have the time, you will have to carve the time. You don't have the time, and let me give an extreme example, but here is your fucking bumper sticker for today. You don't have the time, but God forbid, if your child had an emergency, you're gonna fucking drop everything and you're gonna take up that emergency. So the time that you didn't have, you create it. But it's my child. I had to take care of my child. I understand you're fucking missing the point. Is you didn't have the time, but you carved the time. So this is an emergency for your own well-being. You are getting neglected by yourself. And if you don't take care of you, who the fuck will? So you don't have the time. You carve the time as if your life depends on it, because guess what? It does. We keep putting ourselves at the bottom, and it's like, no, you need to put yourself first so that you can continue to give. But from what is overflowing from your cup, not from the scraps that are left over for you.
Yeah. And I think the quote I heard was, I can't make the time, but I can find the time. So you just have to.
Perfect. I love that. Yes. Yes. That's basically it.
Now, on those nuggets, we could probably wrap this conversation right here, but I'm not going to. You came to Canada, you said, for ART, Accelerated Resolution Therapy. What is that?
That is a technique that it was created by licensed marriage and family therapist. Her name is Lainey. She is trained and licensed in and certified in EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy, which has been around forever. But what she did, what Lainey did, was she uses the eye movements from EMDR, but she adds an image replacement, which makes ART more resolution oriented. So when a traumatic event happens, our brain creates a movie of that event. And any time that the brain gets triggered, it just plays the movie of the event because that's the only movie that it has. With ART, I will be guiding you into watching the movie of the traumatic event twice. And the reason why is because we want to bring all the feelings to the surface. And then you get to change the movie. You make it, so let's say a sexual abuse that happened when you were a child. So you play the movie, and then you get, you can change the movie however you want. But one of the things that I suggest, if I know what the trauma is about, I don't even need to know what the fuck you're processing. If you can see it in your head, I don't need to know. But I'll encourage people to tell me so I can give them suggestions on how to change their movie. One of the powerful things is that you can go as the adult that you are right now and rescue the alien version of yourself. So when you are creating your movie, you go in, you protect, you give yourself the protection that you didn't have. You confront the aggressor. You set the limits. You grab the child and you leave, right? Like, so the earlier version of you. So you can change the movie however you want, whatever works for you. And that is one of the main differences between ART and EMDR, because ART is more resolution oriented. You feel better with the first session. Usually it takes 1 to 5 sessions to resolve something. I've seen like peace of mind and peace in your heart with the first session. I'm very passionate about this technique. Again, like when I did it, when I got trained in 2016, it wasn't as popular on this side of the country. And I was like, no, I want to do this. And for the longest time, I was the only ART, so the only certified ART therapist in Southern Nevada. So if you wanted ART, you better fucking like me because I was the only one. Thank God that changed. Now we have an agency in town that is bringing the trainings to town. So it's becoming more and more popular, but it's very resolution oriented. So you got a traumatic event, you play the movie, you change the movie. You go. It is also used for anxiety or depression. So if you have, let's say, chronic anxiety or chronic depression, the movie will be your typical day. So from like when you wake up until you go to bed. And then when you, air quote, change the movie, close the air quote, you picture yourself how you would like your day to be if you didn't have the anxiety or the depression. So let's say that you is so difficult to get out of bed or shower or cook or clean or whatever, and you're gonna see yourself waking up with a lot of energy and taking a shower and going on about your day and eating healthy and exercise, whatever the fuck you want to do with your day, all the way until you go to bed. And if you have insomnia, you put that in your movie, that you are sleeping well and you wake up refreshed, right? So we are giving your brain that different movie. So now your brain has another channel. It's kind of like the brain has channel 3 with the horror movie, and now we're giving the brain channel 5 with a better movie. But hold on, the movie I create is not real. Correct. But the movie of the trauma is not real as it is not happening right now. It happened when it happened, but it's not happening right now. So in that sense, it's not real either, but the brain cannot differentiate. When it gets triggered, it feels as if the fucking thing was happening right now. So out of this movie that is not real and it's a horror movie, and this movie that is not real but has a better ending, which movie do you want to play?
Right. So
the one that you created.
Once you create your good ending Channel 5 movie, can life trigger your brain back onto Channel 3?
Yes. So what the technique does, so you will have the memory of the traumatic event. Thank you for bringing that up, because I'm like, oh, that's fucking important for people to know. So the purpose of the technique is not to erase the memory, is to remove the negative emotional feelings attached to the memory. So if I ask you, like, do you remember the bike that you had when you were 10? Yeah, you remember it, but you're fucking crying about it. So you will remember the facts of the traumatic event, but it's going to have no emotion attached to it. So what makes the trauma, like what makes us relive the trauma, is not so much the facts, but the emotions that we are attaching to that memory. The technique, what it does, it is kind of like expose you to the memory, so you get desensitized a lot faster than with EMDR. So now I can remember, but it's not affecting me. So I have the memory, oh, this happened when I was 5, this is what happened, blah, 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 just like that, like a robot. I will remember everything, but I remember the facts. To give a similar example, when we had a shooting in Las Vegas on October 1st of 2017, there was a big music festival, and a lot of people died. So I had a client who was a supervisor at Mandalay Bay, which is where the shooting happened. And she was not at the shooting, but she was like with her team members, and she was hearing the shots through the phone call. So here comes New Year's Eve. It's approaching, right? What do we do? Fireworks. So I instructed her to watch videos of fireworks every day leading to December 31st. So that's what desensitization is. I'm so exposed to the fireworks, to the noise of the fireworks, that when it's happening, I'm not thinking that they are shots. I know that they are fireworks. So this is a similar concept. Because we are exposing you to the memory and you get to change it, then you recall the memory, but it's not affecting you in a negative way.
I think you've already answered this question. In your profile, you survived cancer, abusive relationships, depression, and suicidal ideation. So I guess obviously that helps you deal with those clients, but helping other clients or working with other trauma clients, does that help you stay in your healing place, your healed place as well?
Yes. So one of the things about trauma is that, you know, healing is a process. It's not a destination. It's a journey. It's not a destination, right? So when I see someone experiencing a traumatic event and they are vulnerable enough to share that with me, I see it as a privilege and an opportunity to help you heal. So if I sit there and fucking cry with you, we're not going to get anywhere. But when you are so vulnerable to show me the wound and we get to work on that together, it's such an honor for me. So it does kind of like remind me that trauma happens to all of us, and that sometimes if it's a similar situation to what I had experienced personally, it kind of like shows me how far I came. But it's not like I get re-triggered. Is that I was like, oh, I have a, I might not share this with you as my client because like we are talking about you are the important one, not me. But internally, I'm like, oh shit, okay. And it shows me how far I came. A note on suicidal ideation. A lot of times, so suicidal ideation is very real, and I encourage anybody who is experiencing any kind of suicidal ideation to seek help immediately. Like this cannot wait. What I have noticed with my own and in certain people is that not necessarily we want to die, but we are tired. But because we live in such a black and white state of mind, it's like all what I want is the pain to stop. Emotional, physical, it doesn't matter. But I have a lot of pain and I want that pain to stop. And when I'm alive, that pain is all what I can feel. So since I'm alive, the way to stop the pain might be to die. And what I want people to know is that when you are tired of the pain, you need to rest, not die. Right? Like, so you find that help, whatever it might be for you, where like I confronted suicidal ideation many, many times in my life. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, I'm glad that I didn't kill myself because I got to experience a lot of great things in my life. And it's like, but if I would have moved forward with killing myself, I wouldn't be here, right? Like, so it's like, do you really want to die or are you tired of the pain? This is a question I ask. In 9 out of 10 times, my clients say, I'm tired of the pain. Okay, then we are going to rest. But you don't need to die, right? So understanding that there is a way out of this pain, that you don't see it right now. And I understand that. All what you feel and see is a fucking pain. I understand that. But there are ways out of this. So if you are tired of the pain, it's kind of like your arm hurts, and instead of like healing the wound, you fucking chop the arm off. No, like, okay, let's fucking heal the arm, right? Like, let's heal the wound so that you can keep your arm. And it's the same with our life. It's like, well, if I'm living and in so much pain, then I think the only way out is death. And it's not. There are other ways of mitigating the pain. And once you, in life will always happen. So a lot of times we are waiting for life to be perfect so I can feel good. Well, I fucking got news for you. Like that ain't never gonna happen. So we need, but you have confronted so many fucking challenges in your life. How do I know because you're here? Like I don't even need to know what those challenges were. But you are here. You're in front of me. So that means that you have 100% record of overcoming challenges. why is this one going to be any fucking different? So you keep putting one foot in front of the other. You don't know how the fuck you're gonna get out of this, but you didn't know how you were gonna get out of that fucking situation 10 years ago, and you did. Again, how do I know? Because you're here. So you fucking figured it out. And I want people to remember that when they were in that situation, they didn't even know how the fuck they want to get out of it. But they figured it out. Because it's kind of like, oh, well, how I'm gonna get the fuck out? I don't even know what the fuck to do with my life, let alone tell you what to do with yours. But we are gonna fucking find the answers together. You don't have to do this alone. And that's when I come into the picture, where we are going to be working together. You need to do the work. I'm not going to do it for you. But at that time, 10 years ago, when you were going through something, you didn't have everything figured it out. You forgot. Now you look back and you're like, oh, I blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but at the time, you didn't even know how the fuck you were gonna, this was gonna end. And yet you did it. And that's what I want people to remember. Like, it's like you don't have to have everything figured out, but you need to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And then the answer will come. But if you give up, you're never gonna find the answer.
Yeah, and I've heard so many people say that, remember, and I've said it, remember what you've already worked your way through. But I appreciate you just going more in depth of, like you, the therapist, cannot give them any answers, but you can go with them on their journey. Just to
Right.
now, do you ever find people who they come for therapy, but they don't really want to be healed. There's just something in there, whether they like being in that place of pain or like being the victim or whatever.
Yes. So I don't, those are not my kind of clients.
No,
And
yeah.
we find that really quick, right? Like, because that's more toward the line of personality disorders, and I don't deal with that. So I will refer you out. But the thing is that the client might think that they are ready to get better, and then they realize that it's a lot of work, and they're like, oh, fuck this. Like, it's not easier, but it's a lot more manageable to remain in the comfort zone. Although they are miserable, they know that misery rather than risking working so hard for something that has no guarantees, because you're going to be working so hard and it's not a guarantee you're going to feel better. But what should inspire you to work hard is so that you don't remain in the comfort zone of misery, right? Like, it's to get you out of this, right? I didn't know if social work was going to work for me, but I try it so that I always can go back to accounting. Nobody is taking that away from me. But if this works out, I'm very passionate about what I do. Okay, but I didn't have a guarantee this was going to work. But if I never try it, I will still be doing accounting and probably a lot more unhappy and feeling unfulfilled than I am right now. So you're working so hard for something that doesn't have a guarantee you're going to feel better. But the goal is that you are stepping away from the misery, right? Like, a lot of people, it's a lot more, not easier, but a lot more manageable for them. And to remain in the place of misery. But the reason why I don't say it's easy is because they are in a lot of pain, and it's kind of like, I want to guarantee that this is, as a client, I want you to guarantee me that I'm going to feel better. I don't have, I can't guarantee that, because life will continue to happen. But don't you feel more fulfilled when you are confronting a challenge, and that at another time in your life it will have taken you down, and now you're like, okay, motherfucker, come on, like I'm gonna confront you. And it's like that, but I cannot give you that. You either have it or you don't. This is like work ethic. You either have it or you don't. I can train you all I want, but if you don't have work ethic, I cannot fucking give it to you, right? So, do you want, do you love yourself enough to provide yourself with a potential solution?
So many nuggets. This is great. I appreciate it. Now, you deal with victims of domestic violence. Are there any legal obligations around things like that, or does client confidentiality come first? Like, I mean,
So the limits to confidentiality is when you tell me that when you are in danger or someone else is in danger. But so like if you told me I'm going to kill myself or I'm going to kill Agnes, like I had to report that. And abuse, right? Like children abuse and elderly abuse. But when it comes to domestic violence, I'm not mandated to report because you are an adult. Right. So, but what I help you with is to realize that you don't have to. So, one of the keys for domestic violence is not, we want the perpetrator to change, and we have no control over that. Right. Like, so I want you to stop beating the shit out of me, or emotionally abusing me, or mentally abusing me or whatever, but I have no control over that. But I have 100% control of me, my reactions, my responses, right? Like, so the way that I work with domestic violence is to build your self-esteem so that eventually you leave when it's safe for you to leave. One of the big misconceptions about domestic violence is like the women who leaves is more risk. I think it's 8 times more a risk of losing her life than the one who remains. So if a lot of people are like, why doesn't she leave? She must like it. No, she doesn't leave because she's preserving her life. So you start building your self-esteem, you start building a plan, you start working on that. And when you are working on that, you don't have so much time to be focusing on what the other motherfucker is doing because you're focusing on you. And then you grow strong enough until you can leave in a safe way, in a safe manner, right? The last thing I want for you to do, and especially if you have children. So the court will order you, like unless you prove that the perpetrator is a threat to the child, he sent you to the hospital, but unless you prove that it's a threat to the child, did he send the child to the hospital? If you cannot prove that, then the parental rights remain. So I'm gonna see you in court. I know where you're gonna be, right? Even if you're in a shelter, whatever. So, leaving not necessarily is the best solution, but staying while you are working on a plan to leave is a different story. So, it takes longer, but it's safer.
Now, you also present to businesses about conflict resolution. Is that a busy part of your practice? And second part of that question is, do you get clients following up through like employee assistance programs?
So it is not busy yet, but the idea is that I will go to your place of employment and provide ideas and suggestions to the employees, like about assertive communication or not personalizing and analyzing the cycle of anger, like anxiety, whatever it might be that your company needs, and then providing those tools to the employees so they can the conflict in the workplace will decline. And I am contracted with a employee assistance program company. I don't know where. I think they're based off, I don't know, somewhere here in the States, but I do provide therapy for their EAP program for the people who live in Southern Nevada. But on my private practice, no, I'm not. I don't take insurance, and I'm only contracted with this particular EAP. And the reason why I don't take insurance is because insurance companies have a tendency to establish how many sessions they approve, right? Like so if you're coming for trauma, okay, I approve 8 sessions or 6 sessions, whatever the fuck. And I don't want the insurance company to, like, let's say we are uncovering a traumatic event with ART, and then something else comes up as part of that memory, and I'll be like, oh no. Fuck it, we're going to take care of this trauma only because that's what the insurance is covering. I want you and I to determine how long the treatment will be and how many sessions we are going to be working together. My goal when I have you as a client is to get you the fuck out of my office. I don't want you here because that means that I gave you the tools and now you can use the tools because life will continue to happen. So, and another reason is because insurance doesn't pay shit. So it's like I'm very specialized in what I do, and I'm like, I want to get paid for it, right?
Well, and
So
isn't there some truth too to once there's a diagnosis on your official health record, that can affect your future in a number of different
yes.
ways.
Absolutely, and especially in the military, and you know, like if you need clearance or like, yeah, it can affect. So when you come to me, I do a diagnosis out of because it's part of like my training, but I really don't need to give you a diagnosis if that you are fucking anxious and you cannot sleep and your life, okay, let's get to work so that you can fucking feel better. Who cares what your diagnosis is? It's like, yes, it gives me an idea, but it's like I'm very organic in the way that I work. Like a lot of therapists will, I will do an assessment, but I don't necessarily develop a treatment plan and I follow like the fucking, like, because we have all these plans and then something tragic happened unexpectedly. No, we are gonna do the fucking treatment plan. Like, the treatment plan is a guide, but I'm more organic in the way that I do practice therapy.
Okay, now your practice is called Dragonfly Therapy. Is there meaning with the dragonfly?
Yes, dragonflies, thank you for asking that. Dragonflies symbolizes ch change that comes from the inside. So dragonflies, they fly across the water and they eat the bacteria that is on the surface so the light can go in.
Oh,
So that's
okay.
why I chose that name. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I was quite surprised. I before I put that question in, I did a little therapy or a little research on dragonflies, and I was going like, oh my goodness, like there's so many reasons why dragonfly would be
Right.
used. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, our listeners are mostly mid-age women. Do you have any messages for them about mental health as they navigate their 60s? 70s and beyond, you know, we're mostly so much more active and engaged in our elder years than our previous generations were. What do you say to them about dealing with their shit?
Absolutely. So here is the thing. We go to the gym, right? Because we don't want to have a heart attack. Going to therapy is kind of like going to the gym for your mental health. So you don't have to have an issue necessarily. to go to therapy is like you have that neutral person to provide you with a different perspective. And can you do it alone? Absolutely. But why? If you have that those many tools, why not use them, right? So it's never too late. Shit, I start doing podcasts at 59. Hello. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like it's never too late. So the same way that you are taking care, you're watching what you're eating and you're going to the gym or you are walking or whatever the fuck it is that you are taking that you are doing to take care of you, let's not forget your mental health. So if you take it as a self-care option rather than a chore, if something is fucking wrong with me, I'm not crazy. Why do I need to go to therapy? You don't need to be crazy to go to therapy. You go to therapy to get that neutral perspective on a thing that it is unclear for you to see because you're in the middle of it. Well, I do have friends. I'll talk with my friends. Your friends are going to be unconditionally on your side. They are biased. I try not to be because I need to help you see this from a different perspective. If I'm biased and oh poor Agnes, oh pobrecita, like no, I'm gonna be like, bitch, what is your part in this? Right? And we're gonna discover it together. So a friend might be like, well, you know, he's a fucking asshole. Yeah, he might be a fucking asshole, but I'll be asking, why are you remaining in this relationship if he's such an asshole? So I will help you be accountable because he's an asshole, but you are choosing to stay with an asshole. So what does that say about you? Right? So remember, well, we have no video, but I'm pointing my finger. So I want everybody to point their finger. So when you point your finger, you have one finger pointing outwards, but you have three pointing inward. So what
Ooh.
does that mean? So
I've
look in
never
the
heard that
fucking
one
mirror,
before.
right? Like I'm pointing that he's a fucking asshole. Okay, let's see what the other three fingers are telling me. Because why is it that I put up with an asshole? And you might not know. That's fine. That's what we're going to discover together. But therapy is different than talking with a friend because you are doing extra work. So usually with a friend, it's kind of like, you're venting, blah, 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 it's over. And then you get back to the asshole. Okay, that's fine. I'm not telling you to leave the asshole, but we are going to work together on discovering why you remain with an asshole instead of prioritizing your own happiness. And you may have a long list of shit because he provides financially, because you've been together fucking 40 years, whatever it might be. I don't. And that's fine as far as you know why you remain in that. In that situation, I'm not telling anybody to leave, to divorce, no, but I want to help you discover why you remain there. So with therapy or counseling, it's like you are going to be discovering all these things about you and giving yourself permission, maybe for the first time in your life, to prioritize your happiness. And again, it's never too late.
That's what I'm going to call this episode. It's never too
It's
late.
never too late, right? It's not. It really is not.
Good. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
You can, well, my website is dragonflytherapyservices.net, but also you can follow me on Instagram at the swearing therapist. I have a lot of nuggets there, little videos, like talking about mental health, and I made a whole series in October of last year about my journey with breast cancer because October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month here. And also, I started my own podcast, which is called
Oh.
Keeping It Real with Zulma, the Sweating Therapist. It's a baby podcast. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting my first steps into having my own show, but I'll discuss different things about life and mental health and all those kind of things. So you can find me on Spotify or the Apple Podcast is Keeping It Real with Zulma, the Sweating Therapist.
That's great. Okay, that link for sure. Now you're in Nevada. Can you practice only in Nevada, or can you
I
practice?
am licensed, right? I'm only licensed in Nevada. So in because of licensure restrictions, like I only see people who are in Nevada. I can do it virtually to, like, let's say in Reno, it's like 8 hours away from where I'm at, but it's still Nevada. But if it's someone is outside of the state of Nevada, I cannot provide therapy to them. But for anybody listening, if you have any questions, reach out to me. And even if I cannot directly help you, I'm going to provide you the best that I can with resources so that you can find what you need in it doesn't matter where you live.
Okay, perfect. Can I ask you a personal question before we close? Not that we haven't been personal all the way through. Belly dancing?
Yes, so my dad is Arabic. Well, he passed away, but he was born in Syria, and he moved to the United to Argentina when he was 18. And so I grew up, and my mom, my grandparents on my mom's side were from Lebanon, and they moved to Argentina. So my mom was born in Argentina, and my dad met with her when he went to Argentina. So I grew up with the Arabic culture all my life. And I started belly dancing when I was 39, and I loved it. I mean, it was a connection to my roots. And my teacher, I love her to death. Like, she usually told me anytime before I perform, like, if you make a mistake, just keep smiling and keep going. Nobody's gonna notice. But if you stop, then everybody's gonna know. So, and I applied that into my life. I keep smiling and I keep going, right? Just
Keep
if I
on
was
dancing.
keep on dancing.
Okay, so that explains how an Argentinian got into belly
That's
dancing. That's
belly
great.
dancing in America. I haven't done it in a long time, but and in belly dancing is such a great physical
Oh
exercise
yeah,
because
absolutely.
you are engaging the entire body, and also the breathing is so important. So you are incorporating a lot of different things, and it's a lot of fun. So yeah, all you ladies listening, like go get you a belly dancing class. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
That's great.
Encourage everybody listening, explore. Like go to a fucking class. If you don't like it, don't go back. But try it. How the fuck do you know you're gonna like? It's like what we tell the kids, right? Like, well, try it, the new food, right? How do you know you don't like it if you don't try it? How do you know you don't like belly dancing if you never try? Well, I'm overweight. It doesn't matter. This is not a fucking competition to be this belly dancer of the year. It's like it's for you to have fun. So, like explore, like try it. You don't like it, that's fine. Fucking paint rocks. You don't like it, that's fine. Don't do it again. Make a candle, make a soap. I don't know, whatever the fuck is available in your area. And then if you don't like it, that's fine. I love to play backgammon. There are not a lot of people who plays backgammon, so I play online. But when I find somebody in person that plays backgammon, oh my God, I want to fucking like kidnap you. You know what I mean? Like, because it's a different dynamic when you are doing it in person. So I found a meetup group that does Saturday's board game night or whatever shit. I fucking explore that. And I brought my backgammon, with me. And I play backgammon. I was like, oh my God, I'm in paradise right now. But that would have never happened if I didn't go, if I didn't try it. So whatever you are curious about, I don't know in your area, but here we have rec centers where like there's a lot of different classes and
Community centers,
explore
yeah.
the community centers. Explore fucking classes there. Like do a drop-in. If you don't like it, don't go back. Like don't sign for the month, but do a drop-in and you might discover like I started podcasting because I was a guest in a podcast about my breast cancer journey for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I loved it. And I'm like, the fuck? Let me find out more about this. And here I am, 6 months later. I feel so energized every time I do a podcast. And when I'm a guest and when I'm doing my podcast, which for now is only 15 minutes, right? And I'm solo doing it, but I enjoy it so much. And I'm like, that's what it's all about enjoying what you are doing.
Well, I'll agree with you with podcasting. Here am I 6 years later. So, okay, your website link is in the show notes. All of your links, I'm going to track them all down, will be on your page at our
Thank
website.
you.
Listeners, what are your thoughts on today's show? I know many of you have either survived trauma or cancer. I'd appreciate hearing your thoughts. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question I didn't ask Zulma. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. And she's already said to reach out to her. That's great. Share this episode. So many traumatic events are never given the light of day, but moving on in a healthful way is facilitated by dealing with them. If a friend of yours has never talked about trauma, this conversation with Zulma today might be what they need to hear. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button at your favorite podcast platform, and that helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. Zulma Williams, thank you for being my guest today and being so candid about your own experience. But explaining everything, and as I said, so many nuggets today, just priceless. I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. And as a closing thought, I want to tell the audience, if you woke up today, that means that your mission in life is not over. So just keep pushing through one day at a time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the week.